Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to News in Focus and Happy New Year to you listeners. And we pray that it is a blessed new year to you and your family. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the new Congress that was sworn in on Tuesday of this week. And also the Ohio General Assembly, also the 132nd General Assembly at the state capitol sworn in on Tuesday as well, as many new members were sworn in on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and also in Columbus. And this is the oath of office that congressional members take. I do solemnly swear, affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter, so help me God. And that is the congressional oath of office that the members took on Tuesday of this week. And with us on the phone is our good friend from the 6th District, Congressional District here in Ohio, and no stranger to News and Focus, Bill Johnson. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's good to be with you. And you know, that oath of office has a very, very deep meaning to me, because I not only took it multiple times, it's the same oath, essentially, that officers in the military take. So I took it each and every time that I was promoted or re-enlisted. And I administered that oath of office to many of our young, brave troops that serve on the front lines every day to keep us free. So I have it memorized, if that means anything.
It sure does. And of course, we thank you for your military service over the years, and of course, now as a member of the United States Congress, and again, reelected this last November for another term, representing the fine people of the 6th Congressional District of Ohio. And I know that they're pleased that you're returning to Washington, and I know that you're chomping at the bit, because now we really have an opportunity. We've been waiting for this for some time, over the last 8 years of the failed policies of Barack Obama and the Democratic policies, really, which failed in their mission. Mr. Obama came to office saying that there was time for hope and change, and that he had his vision of what he thought the country ought to do. But quite honestly, 8 years later, we are really in a world of hurt on a number of fronts. But the good news is the cavalry has showed up, because we not only have the Republicans that are controlling the U.S. House of Representatives, they're controlling the U.S. Senate, and now, for the first time in 8 years, controlling the presidency with the election of Donald J. Trump and Mike Pence as the 45th president and vice president elect. Your thoughts?
I think it's a time for extreme optimism, Chris. The excitement and the energy here in the House of Representatives about what we're going to be able to do, I can tell you. In fact, going on the House floor right now is debate on a bill called the RAINS Act. RAIN is an acronym. It stands for Regulations by the Executive in Need of Scrutiny. We have tried to pass the RAINS Act or get it signed into law numerous times over the last 6 years to reel in some of the onerous regulations that are strangling businesses and industries across our country, particularly industries like coal and oil and gas and manufacturing. And we've been very unsuccessful because we couldn't get a president that would sign it. Now we've got a Senate that will pass it, a president that will sign it. And so now we're going to be able to restore the voice of the American people in the rulemaking process, because under that act, any rule that cost our economy more than $100 million a year is going to have an up or down vote by the U.S. House of Representatives before that federal agency can implement that rule. It's a big, big day. And there are many other such activities going on as we speak.
Well, that's right. And there is a lot of optimism by members of both the House and Senate to move an agenda very quickly. And, of course, yesterday we heard big news by Obamacare is on the chopping block. And Congress is going to get to work right away for the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. And the new president-elect and Congress is going to pull together the best minds to put together a way forward and leaving in the rear view Obamacare, which, by the way, is failing. It's failing on so many levels. The exchanges aren't working. Obamacare itself is lopsided as to those who sign up and the obligations, people being penalized for not buying health insurance. I mean, you know, this is we never thought we'd see this day come in our country. And so there were so many problems. Premiums, of course, have skyrocketed with Obamacare failing. And so it's a great day to know that we're moving forward. Of course, here in Ohio, we made our mark by passing a health care freedom amendment a few years ago, in which the U.S. Supreme Court essentially struck down. It was to challenge Obamacare. And in a second decision, in a narrow 5-4 vote, I believe, Obamacare was upheld again with the subsidies. But all that will be in the past now as Congress will take on a very big task, obviously, in dismantling Obamacare and replacing it. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I want to make sure that we have a very clear understanding of what that means, Chris. The president-elect and vice president-elect, Mr. Trump and Governor Pence, they are absolutely committed to this. They campaigned on it, and they are committed to do it. The members of the Republican members of the House and the Senate are committed to do it. But I want to take just a brief moment and make sure that our people, the people that are going to be impacted the most by this, understand what this actually looks like and what it will mean. The law, the Affordable Care Act, that was jammed down the American people's throat, that put health care in the hands of bureaucrats and took it out of the hands of patients and their doctors. The law that actually did the things that you just talked about resulted in soaring premiums and deductibles, health care professionals that have left the industry, market collapses in the insurance industry. All of those negative impacts, just absolutely skyrocketing health care costs. All of those things have been in place now since 2010. And industries have reshaped and reformed and tried their best to negotiate this maze of bureaucratic complexity that resulted in the Affordable Care Act. Now, we can repeal the Affordable Care Act through a process called reconciliation. We can eliminate the fiscal aspects of the law, the employer mandate, the individual mandate, and some of the fines and penalties and those kinds of things. We can do that under a process called reconciliation because you only have to have 51 votes in the Senate to be able to pass that. But all of the rules and regulations that have gone into effect that implemented Obamacare, those are now built into the law of the land, and to replace those and return health care to patients and their doctors and lower cost and lower premiums, et cetera, Chris, that's going to take some time.
Right.
The last thing that the American people wants Congress to do is to have another 3,000-page piece of legislation that's introduced at midnight, voted on at 2 o'clock in the morning, and has unintended consequences that just blow our healthcare system out of the water, because people have responded to this system, and we've now got to be careful that we do no harm, that we don't make matters worse. So I just want to make sure that all of our listeners understand the implications of a statement that you made, that our president and our vice president-elect, they and the administration are going to have a big say-so in what this new healthcare system looks like. So I don't want anybody to think that on January 20th that Obamacare is going to be completely reformed, because it's just not going to happen.
Right. I appreciate you saying that, Congressman, because there is so much complexity to it, because it wasn't, it took over, what was it, one-fifth of the federal government?
One-sixth of our economy.
One-sixth of our economy.
Yeah.
So that is one major task, and one in which we'll be praying for you, your colleagues in both the House and the Senate, and the president-elect.
Yeah.
And I know that he's going to receive a lot of good instruction. You know, there was a lot of good models that were out there that were basically pushed to the side.
There's a lot of good ideas
of portability across state lines. If we had had that in the past, it would have made for competitive pricing for insurance policies. So there's so many options that are for people going forward, and it will take some time. And so it will be very exciting to see, of course, with some of the initial things. What do you expect to happen, though, right out of the gate that will change? What about the employer mandate?
Right out of the gate, here's what's going to happen, or at least here's the plan for what's going to happen right now. The Senate has already introduced and is in the debate stages of a budget resolution. For us to execute the process of budget reconciliation, which is a very, very specific legislative process with a very, very rigid and defined set of rules that go along with it. And it has to meet a certain set of criteria. And that criteria is determined whether a reconciliation bill qualifies is determined by the parliamentarian in the Senate. They have a set of guidelines, a set of questions that have been in the law for years that deal with reconciliation, and they have to go through and make sure that the reconciliation bill meets the parameters of those, the criteria of the law. Now, before you can get to reconciliation, you must have a budget resolution pass the House and a budget resolution pass the Senate. The Senate has already introduced theirs. They are in the debate stages, and we expect that the Senate's budget resolution will be finalized sometime next week. We in the House are currently working on our budget resolution. Now, no one should be deceived. This is a transitional, procedural vehicle so that we can get to budget reconciliation, so that we can take the same, essentially the same bill, Chris, the same bill that defunded the employer mandate, that defunded Obamacare, that defunded the individual mandate, and that defunded Planned Parenthood, that was put on the president's desk last year. You remember the bill that was vetoed?
We talked about that, yes.
That's right. That's essentially the same bill, for the most part, that's going to show up on Donald Trump's desk on January 20th.
Mm.
And so for us to do that, we're going to have to pass a budget resolution in the House. Now, that does not mean that we can't come back. In fact, we will. In March and April, we will be coming back again and passing another budget resolution for the 2018 and 10-year period beyond that. Okay?
Yes.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and we've got a lot of informing and educating and making sure that the people we represent know that this initial budget resolution that's going to come out of the House and the Senate is a procedural legislative tactic that will enable us, under the law, to execute budget reconciliation to put a repeal of Obamacare, a repeal of the employer and individual mandate, and a defunding of Planned Parenthood on then-President Trump's desk on January 20th.
Oh, that's exciting, Congressman. And again, you know, these are things that we were just dreaming about for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
To actually be able to do these things and now to have them a reality. And again, for Congress, and I want to commend Congress for getting to work so quickly. I know I spoke with Jim Renacci, and he said, look, I'm going to be in Washington on Monday, and that was the federal holiday. He said, we're getting right at it on Tuesday, and of course, the swearing in, and you're right on top of it. So you're saying the president-elect that afternoon, and by the way, I really like his attitude. He's wanting to get to work right away, rolling up his sleeves. In fact, you know, people have asked me about inauguration activities, and of course there'll be an inauguration, the swearing in and the mall and a parade and, you know, inaugural balls and receptions, those kinds of things, but very much scaled down from years past. And, you know, I think that's okay. I mean, I attended in 2004, had the privilege of attending a few receptions, an inaugural ball and the inauguration itself, and it was very, very nice. And
they're going to be tremendously scaled down, Chris. Let me give you an example. And don't quote me on these numbers, but these are orders of magnitude, so you and our listeners will understand. I believe in 2008 and 12, when Barack Obama was elected, there were something on the order of 9+ inaugural balls.
Right.
Donald Trump and Vice President Pence are going to attend 3 activities.
And one of them is a military ball for the military only. And I think that's awesome. I think that's great.
And the parade that usually goes for hours is only going to last 90 minutes.
I think that's great, and I've been to the parade route as well. Back in 2000, I took my kids down there. We went to the mall. Of course, we nearly froze. It was a cold rain that turned into a snow, and we got out of Dodge that day, and we're up in the mountains, and of course, they don't know anything about when they get a half a foot of snow. There's no plows or anything, so we got stuck up in the mountains that night in the car, but it was exciting for them. That was back in 2000 with George Bush's first term, but
My perception is that President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Pence are wanting to postpone the celebration until something's actually done.
Amen to that.
They want to roll up their sleeves, put on their work boots, and get to the office and begin to sign executive orders that will roll back executive orders and onerous regulations that are possible under executive order from the Obama administration, sign this budget reconciliation package that will repeal Obamacare, and then will give us the starting point to begin the really, really hard work of redoing, reforming, restructuring the healthcare policies in this country to get bureaucrats out of the healthcare business and put healthcare decisions back in the hands of patients and their doctors without doing harm to millions of Americans who've had to now respond to this debacle of a law.
That's right. We're talking with Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. We're talking about the opening session of the 115th Congress. and how they were getting ready to roll up their sleeves and get to work with the new president-elect, Donald J. Trump, and we're just days away from his inauguration, which will be a scaled-down version.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman, we just have a few more minutes with you, and I want to ask you, because you come on this program with Bob Murray and Jim Martin and Pat Boone, and we do the roundtable discussions on the war on coal and the EPA regs. Give us an update. Now, things are looking more promising for coal and for energy policy going forward. Give us your thoughts on that.
They are. And let me give you two data points. Number one, as you know, at the end of the year, December 16th, the Interior Department, the Obama administration, published their rule called the Stream Protection Rule. It is a devastating rule to the coal industry. You and Bob Murray and I have talked about that over the last 6 years. A number of times. In spite of our best efforts, the Obama administration went ahead and published that rule. But in reality, Chris, they may have given us a great Christmas gift at the same time, because someone did not calculate the law known as the Congressional Review Act. Under the Congressional Review Act, Congress can set aside a rule that within a certain period of time, Congress has to be in session for 20 legislative days in order to be able to do so consistently. But we can set aside that rule, and here's the key point. That rule can never, ever, nothing like it, nothing similar to it, can ever be advanced by any future administration once the president signs a Congressional Review Act doing away with the rule. We've got the commitment of the majority leader in the Senate. We've got the commitment of the Speaker of the House, and the President of the United States at that time, Donald Trump, has committed to signing that Congressional Review Act. I'll be the one introducing it here in the House, and along with my colleague David McKinley from West Virginia, and we will do away with this Stream Protection Rule forever.
Awesome.
Now, point number two, one of our colleagues, a great supporter of the coal industry, Ryan Zinke from Montana, former Navy SEAL, has been selected as Trump's nomination to head up the office of the Department of the Interior. So I can guarantee you that the Interior Department and the Office of Surface Mining and Reclamation, the Bureau of Land Management, all of those agencies that come under the Interior Department, there's a new sheriff in town, and they will be taking a different, more positive view of the use of coal in America's energy profile.
Oh, that is so good to hear. And, you know, Mr. Murray has been almost standing alone in this war on coal, and there's been coal mining operations that have gone bankrupt and closed down during these years, and for no good reason. I mean, these were good-paying Ohio jobs. These were families. These were a way in which we could affordably keep the lights on here in the Midwest, and with this wonderful resource that God has given to us, only to have that being taken off the table during the Obama EPA years. It's so good to know that things will be made right with the new Congress. Well, again, we're talking with Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. Congressman, we're going to have you back on. We've got so much to talk about, but you've given us a great report today. Do know that our prayers and our thoughts are with you as you head into the work of the new Congress. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, my friend. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And again, our thanks to Congressman Johnson for stopping in today and giving us that report on the new Congress in Washington. When we come back on the other side, we'll be hearing from our good friend, Greg Quinlan, and we'll be talking about some important issues that are coming up. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat. And the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
And we're back, and we're going to talk this segment, we're going to talk about some of the court decisions and policy decisions during the Obama years that we're going to have to deal with. And of course, the SCOTUS decision on homosexual marriage and them tying that to the 14th Amendment, and how there is still an uphill battle for the church and for decency laws in this country. I'm reading here from an article from the Daily Signal. Court strikes down transgender mandate protecting doctors, children, and hospitals. This was from Lori Windham, who is the chief counsel at the Beckett Foundation for Religious Liberty, a legal group that took on this case. And here's what it says. While family and friends were counting down to the new year, I was watching a different kind of countdown. Whether doctors and healthcare providers would be forced to violate their medical judgment and provide procedures, including gender transition services and abortions under a new governmental mandate. The mandate is a 362-page regulation that claims to interpret part of the Affordable Care Act. It was issued in May 2016, and a major portion of this mandate would have kicked in on January 1. Beckett Law had asked a Texas court for an order protecting healthcare providers. It was less than 9 hours to midnight when we heard the good news. A Texas court issued an injunction protecting doctors and families they serve from the mandate. And here to talk with us about that more and other issues is Greg Quinlan, president of the Center for Garden State Families, and no stranger to this program, and also lecturing on the ills of homosexuality. And he is a former gay man that is living for the Lord and doing a great work. Welcome to the program, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
Well, did you see this court case that the Beckett group was working on down in Texas? You're aware of the situation?
Yeah, I'm aware of the situation. The Beckett Fund is an excellent organization. And you know they're good when they're on the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list. So it's really good. I've been trying to get on that list for a long time. I feel like they're being bigoted toward me. I should file a discriminatory.
Well, let's see if we can't change that. Well, it's good to hear from you, my friend. And I know you've been doing some outstanding work on family policy work in the state of New Jersey and beyond. And, of course, you know, you and I have been working on these issues for years here in Ohio and then beyond as you've gone to other issues and other projects. But Massachusetts, obviously, back in 2003, the first state to legalize by their Supreme Court homosexual marriage, now is also the ones that are taking it a step further, meaning the Obergefell decision. And their legislature passed a law granting public access to transgenders, and in so doing, The Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts interprets that that includes churches. In fact, he stated that any church that wouldn't be in compliance with the new law would face a $2,500 fine to start with, and he would continue further prosecutorial procedures. Your thoughts on that?
There is an anti-Christian move in this country, and I'm going to flat out say it just so that everyone knows this. There are very few friends for people of faith in the Democrat Party. Democrat Party is the party of the homosexual movement. I was a gay activist. I was the token pro-life Republican volunteer at the Human Rights Campaign Fund way back in the late 80s into the early 90s. And I can tell you that the agenda is simply this: silence Christianity. And the reason why is because Christianity is against what the homosexual, what the sexual anarchists want to do. Also, they have to reinterpret or change the United States Constitution, because the U.S. Constitution is a Christian document. It is a reformist document. And with that being said, it is everything that they're trying to do will usurp, turn over on its head our religious liberties, our freedoms, and the country that we grew up knowing and loving. We are under attack, and there's nothing to stop it except the people of faith. And I'm very, very encouraged that more evangelicals and pro-life Catholics came out to vote this last presidential election, but it's not enough. We have to get, just as we did with Christian Coalition way back in the day, and I know, Chris, you and I, you know, we go back a long time.
We do.
It was Christian Coalition that really took over the Congress back in 94, when we had Hillary Care being pushed upon us with the Clinton administration. And we have to go back again and train people to be candidates, train people to get elected, and to work hard for our Judeo-Christian ethic, because the Constitution of the United States is a Christian document.
Why these battles
need to be changed if we don't stand up?
That's right. And why these battles mean so much, Greg? And you mentioned the Human Rights Campaign, right?
Yeah, HRC,
which is basically a radical homosexual group that's very effective in what they do. And for instance, let's take a look at the North Carolina gubernatorial race with Pat McCrory, a good Christian man who was assigned the bathroom bill, basically a decency bill in the state of North Carolina. He then became the main target of that group and radical homosexuals across the country. Liberals poured lots of money into that race. Now, Pat McCrory barely lost to his opponent, the new governor, Roy Cooper, but the radical left poured in millions of dollars into that gubernatorial race. Now, and Pat McCrory barely lost, but he did lose, it looks like, so he conceded. But the concern was there. People said we need to rally around Pat McCrory, because if we don't, no other governor will want to stand. Now, the good news is the election was a sweep for Republicans across the country, with Donald J. Trump, with congressional and Senate races and gubernatorial races and state. The Democrats lost, I forget how many seats across the country and state legislatures and up and down the ticket. They're in a really world of hurt as a party. But even though Mr. McCrory lost, Pat lost, but because the fight was so important, and even though he lost, the signal was there, hey, this is a fight worth fighting. And other governors now have been emboldened, because the concern was that other governors would not want to step up to the plate. You know, for instance, John Kasich, governor of Ohio, said, oh, no, we're not going to sign a bill like that here in Ohio. Well, you know, we've got some, you know, we have Governor Kasich for two more years, but we're going to take the governor to task on a number of family policy issues, and we're going to detail them here on this program and be busy at the Ohio legislature. But the good news is the Texas governor just signed in that same law into that bill into law in Texas. So, really good news there that governors are stepping up to the plate and moving forward with these decency laws.
This has to happen everywhere. We're going to be in real danger here in New Jersey when we lose Chris Christie. For all the negatives of Chris Christie, he is a pro-life, pro-family governor, and he has stopped a lot of madness. And I'm in the state where madness happens. That's the only thing that's keeping us from looking like California. Back to North Carolina, though, the Republican governor, who was pro-family Christian, he did one stupid thing. He was supporting a toll road, which is a tax, and that helped the other side do him in. And because they know how to play. I mean, they know how to fight. They know how to – they take little issues. And besides the issue that they're for, they'll take other issues and incite voters to do what they want to do, even though those voters may not realize that what they're doing is pushing the homosexual agenda. You know, we need to be wise. We need to be smart, because the devil has been a liar from the beginning. He's the father of lies, and he knows exactly how to incite us into doing something that he wants to do without us even knowing we're doing it. So I would just people to be encouraged to be knowledgeable, to be wise, to take a look at what's going on, look at the big picture. Because there are some people in North Carolina who were against the transgender issue, but they voted against the governor that was supporting their position there because of something else. And we've got to be smart about this.
Well, there's going to be an opportunity to move forward on a number of pro-life, pro-family legislation. Now, here in Ohio, we had Governor Kasich that line item vetoed the heartbeat bill at the close of session. Also, we had an opportunity for the Pastors Protection Act, which would have protected pastors, churches, church property from lawsuits when their faith dictates that they do not believe that a marriage is between a man and a woman, not two men, not two women. And, you know, so if those same-sex individuals that wanted to file a lawsuit against a pastor or a church or church entity, a religious organization, they would be protected under the law. It passed committee, but the Speaker of the Ohio House did not take it up. Now, we were very disappointed in the close of session that it was not brought to the full floor for a vote. Now, our suspicion is the governor behind the scenes is working against this bill, he and his people. Now, the sponsor of the bill, State Representative Nino Vitelli, was assured by the speaker that in the next session, and that's this year, that's not right now, they were just sworn in this week, that it would be taken up very early in the process. Now, you and I have been through this a few times, and what we learned is at the beginning of each session is the budget is the big responsibility of the legislature. So it takes up the lion's share of their time and energy. And then anything after that, itemization of legislation, gets kicked down the calendar, as it were. And most of our bills didn't even get introduced by Legislative Services Commission until March, late February, March or April. And then into committee by May and then June, and then they recess. And so we know how the game's played. And I told the representative, I said, I wouldn't take any assurances. Get what you can now, has been my experience. Well, you know, live and learn. He'll find out. He said, well, I've been given assurances that we're going to put this first up. Well, we'll see how it goes, and we'll report, have you back on the program, because I know you're interested in that. But
absolutely,
these kinds of legislation, pieces of legislation, of course, you know, RFRA laws, Religious Freedom Restoration Act. What about businesses that, you know, homosexuals come in and they want them to make a cake, or they want them to do services for a wedding, and the vendor says, you know, it's against my conscience to do that. I can provide for you any other services that you wish, be happy to do so, but I cannot participate in your ceremony. Well, the fact is that these people are being targeted with lawsuits across the country. And we've had members of the Liberty Council, their legal staff, come on the program, Matt Staver, Richard Mast, and others, discuss that. And I know that you've worked with Liberty Council as well. Thoughts along these lines? I mean, you know, now that we've had a major election victory, there's just going to be a pause here, I think, for a short time. Now, we have to understand, and the folks have to understand, that, Greg, these people have had great access to the Oval Office for the last 8 years. We're talking about homosexual activists and groups. They have been able to go right in to Barack Obama's Oval Office. In fact, those groups have had more visits to the White House over the last 8 years than the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the military.
Doesn't that say something? But you don't hear that. Not even Fox News reports that. But it doesn't that say a lot? The homosexual agenda is well-heeled. They know exactly what they're doing. In fact, we can learn from their playbook, and we should. We should examine how they did what they did and see where we can implement the same tools and procedures without compromising our faith or our values. The homosexual agenda is the biggest threat we have. It's not communism. It's even as dangerous as ISIS, because it will certainly change everything that we know about our religious liberties and our freedom. The RFRA law was passed under Bill Clinton. A Republican Congress did it, but that was under Bill Clinton, and he signed it into law. But the RFRA laws, because of federal judges being appointed by liberals like Bill Clinton, even judges that Bush appointed, have been, and then of course there hasn't been a decent judge appointed by Barack Obama in 8 years. This is how bad it has gotten, because the judges have been legislating from the bench, they've been making law from the bench, they've been reinterpreting the Constitution, and by so doing, they have whittled away at religious liberty, allowing the homosexual agenda and others to promote their agenda. Please be advised, everyone, there is not a federal law in the United States Revised Code that recognizes homosexual marriage. We have a Supreme Court decision, and we're operating off the opinion of five justices.
That's right. And the Republican Party national plank that was constructed right here in Cleveland with the RNC convention last July is the most pro-life, pro-family conservative platform ever constructed by the Republican Party. And in it, the verbiage concerning the court is to appoint justices that will actually repeal the Obergefell decision, that will support traditional marriage. And, you know, many people, that's why people voted for the Republicans as a whole, as a game changer, as a shift, a dynamic shift politically. And that's, they're expecting a great deal, and they ought to get a great deal. And that's why I think you're right, Greg. Now is the time to seize the opportunity. And just before you came on the program, I had Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio 6th District come on and talk about the repeal of Obamacare. Because as we've seen in this court case, they were riding off of Obamacare and the court decision to try to implement some of these public access or mandates. And here it happened to be with physicians, and saying that they had to, they swear an oath under the Hippocratic Oath, but they're saying that they now have to provide for services of abortion or for sex changes with new transgender laws. That's unthinkable. I mean, when you stop and think about it, when someone goes into the medical field, a Christian goes into the medical field and says, wait, you're telling me I'm going to have to perform sex changes for people? I mean, it's ridiculous, but that's how determined these people are. And again, they had great access to the Oval Office over the last 8 years. Well, now it's going to be totally different, and Christians should have great access to the president, elect, and Vice President Pence, and that's a good thing. Now, we still have a real challenge on our hands with the millennials and with the media, and I posted up on our Facebook page, and maybe you saw this, Ellen DeGeneres, who does have a popular daytime talk show, and she was going to have a singer on. This is a black Christian woman, and her name's Kim Burrell, and to appear on her talk show after the gospel singer refused to apologize for a sermon in which she referred to gays as and lesbians as perverted. Well, she goes on to talk about certainly love for them, but she talks about how it's a lie from the devil. That lifestyle is a lie from the devil, and she won't apologize for her faith. And Ellen says, well, we're not having her on the show now. Well, of course, that's her own talk show. Fine. That's great. You know, she can do what she wants. Free country. I agree with that. But the point is that they try to shame Christians now about our beliefs. Your thoughts?
Yes, that's exactly what they want. We are to be the haters. That's the whole idea. That's the propaganda behind everything that they do. Make anyone who is against us a hater. But I want to, if I could, go right back to the Obamacare thing. Your listeners need to understand, it is very important that we do what Michelle Bachmann said when she was still in Congress. Pull this thing out by the roots. Every part of it has to go. Because Obamacare was the most pro-homosexual document there was. Because in it, Obamacare was not just about receiving health care. It was a civil rights document. It's a civil rights document. And there's the danger of Obamacare. So, and with it comes all these special rights and special privileges for transgender surgery, all of these special issues for homosexuals. For example, gestational surrogacy. What is that? That's where you pay a woman to carry your baby. That, and gestational surrogacy, which is being passed in some states, we've been able to fight it off here in New Jersey, of all places. I call it the gay man's baby maker. But in Obamacare is provisions for those kind of, for that kind of procedure.
Well,
these are the things that are in it. There's so much devil in this massive. Remember, what was that? A 20,000-page document that they passed?
Yes.
20,000 pages.
Yes.
Stands taller, like 8 feet tall. This is why it is so important. So now we have the Ellen DeGeneres and others. We just had a conservative. Guy Benson come out as a gay man. I'm aware of his parents. They're good Christian people.
You're talking about he's a talk show. He's a commentator contributor on Fox News, right?
Right, and I think he's with he's also with Town Hall. I think he's the editor for Town Hall, or one of those conservative outlets. And we're normalizing homosexuality. So, and you still hear people, even in my own church, I hear people tell me, well, there's such nice people. And you know what? Mengele gave candy to Jewish children before he experimented on them. This is not an excuse to change what God said is truth. Truth is not your truth or my truth or their truth or our truth. It's not a definition in the dictionary, and it's not a philosophy to be debated. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, truth is a person, and his name is Jesus Christ. We cannot change the truth to accommodate cultural norms or the sin that someone wants to normalize and create as law. We have to stand firm for our faith. We have to understand the why behind it. I have a whole hour presentation nearly that talks about just that, you know. There is no science that supports homosexuals being born gay.
Well, I have a question about that because of what's happening with counseling of gay individuals by counselors who try to share with them about being straight. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Greg Quinlan, president of the Center for Garden State Families. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back with Greg Quinlan, president of the Center for Garden State Families. You're listening to News in Focus and a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. You can learn more at our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. Greg, let's talk about the counseling aspect because you fought a battle there in the state of New Jersey and where you've been on the same page with Governor Christie on some things. This was a grave disappointment because of those counselors that would help individuals to come out of homosexuality. Now they're being penalized. Explain.
Exactly. Let me explain this. It is to stop sexual orientation change therapy. It makes heterosexual therapy illegal, unlawful to give that kind of therapy to a minor, even if the minor does not want the same-sex attraction, the same-sex feelings that he or she has. It will be illegal and outlawed. So heterosexual therapy will become illegal to minors. That's how they're working this. That's how they're doing this. One, they have changed, the homosexual agenda calls it conversion therapy. that's a deliberate attempt to make it sound like a religious thing. That what we're doing here is making this a religious-based thing. In fact, I was there in Massachusetts when they were we were testifying on the bill, and I heard two lesbian women say, this is all about religion. This is the hate of the people who are of religion. So it's not. It's not called conversion therapy. It's called reparative therapy. All therapy seeks to repair something, doesn't it?
Yes.
All of it seeks to repair something. It's called reparative therapy. And it's never used electroshock therapy or induced vomiting, and it's never coerced anybody to flirt with the opposite sex. It's those are the aspects that they call it, the lies. In New Jersey, we heard fascinating testimony from a man who claimed he was a woman, who said that when he was 14, he was sent to a camp in Columbus, Ohio, an Assemblies of God camp called True Directions. I'm Assemblies of God. There is no such camp and never was. And I'm an old man. I'm 58 years old. So we never had a camp.
You're not that old at age 58. Just for the record. Don't make us older than we are. Okay, go on.
Okay, brother. But that net camp never existed in Ohio. And in it, he talked about having electroshock therapy for his feelings. Induced vomiting and horror of horrors. He was forced to flirt with the opposite sex.
Well, Greg, listen, we've run out of time. We're going to have you back. In fact, we're going to have you here in Ohio for some lecture series. And thank you so much what you're doing in New Jersey and beyond. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was Greg Quinlan of New Jersey Family Policy. And you've been listening to News in Focus. We're so glad that you've joined us. Next week, Richard Mass will be joining us from Liberty Counsel to talk about some of the lawsuits currently of Nativity Saints on Public Square. And we're going to talk about the victories we're getting. You're listening to News in Focus. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.